The rock team had set out in the dead of night, far before the battle erupted into hellfire. Chen led them through the thick woods on the eastern edge of Forrester Valley, with Detroit, McCaughlin, Archer, and Rona close behind him. They moved quickly on narrow, shortened skis through the snow-covered fields and hills, wearing white camouflage body suits and loaded down with weapons and plastique. Chen carried exploding star knives, a Japanese short sword at his waist, and other deadly surprises. Detroit wore twin bandoliers of grenades across his chest and carried a snub-nosed Uzi, which he had found on one of CC's supply expeditions. He had grown quite fond of it over the past 2 months. Rona was armed with a sawed-off Liberator set on full auto and equipped with Teflon-coated bullets capable of penetrating steel. Archer, taking up the rear and having some difficulty on the short skis, carried his ever-present crossbow around his shoulders and a quiver full of arrows tipped with everything from exploding charges to gas pellets and an 18-inch twin-bladed hunting knife he had picked up while browsing through the Century City weapons supply. McCaughlin, moving surprisingly well for a man of his size, was equipped with a .357 Magnum and magazine-firing 12-gauge. A light snow was falling as they headed through the still dark woods, but thanks to Dr. Schechter's night vision goggles, they were able to see clear as day as they made their way along a narrow path, trampled down by migrating mountain elk. They hit a good pace, moving quickly as they adapted to the yard-long skis with which they had had only 2 days' practice, shooting down slopes and sliding along flat terrain with the cross-country strokes they had been taught by CC's top ski instructor. They knew their fellows would soon face the battle of their lives out there on the valley floor. But if the rock team could take out enough of the German officer staff, maybe even von Reisling himself, it might make all the difference. They took a circuitous route, heading miles around the valley to avoid encounters with the commando teams that had been scouring the surrounding forests and mountains for days, searching for the famed Century City. But as luck would have it, they had gone but halfway to their attack point when out of nowhere a German ski patrol was upon them. Chen, 20 feet ahead of the others, saw them first, 20 white-suited figures swooping down from a steep hill to their right.
Attack!
Two down. Every member of the rock squad took cover in a split second. They had barely stopped moving when their weapons were in their hands.
Rona! Detroit! To your right!
I see him!
McCaughlin drew his .357. Within 20 seconds, half the Nazi ski squad was lying in the snow. The others pulled back behind a row of low boulders.
We can't stay here. Rona, Detroit, I'm going to count to three. When I reach it, each of you throw a satchel at them. One, two, three!
I think that's all of them.
Let me check. Yeah, that's all of them. Come on, let's get the hell out of here before the reinforcements arrive.
By dawn, the rock squad had left their woods cover and began climbing the southern peaks several miles to the side of where they hoped the German headquarters would be. It was rough going, as they had to go up a steep, rocky slope to avoid detection by Nazi troops dug into the front of the mountain in machine gun and mortar emplacements. With their skis dangling from around their shoulders and laden with nearly 100 pounds of weaponry and explosives, the free fighters hugged the side of the sheer rock wall, dragging themselves up foot by treacherous foot. But the Americans were strong, among the toughest that CC had to offer, and they made good time.
Everybody up?
Yeah. Shit. We're out of shape.
Chen, you see anything?
Let me get out the binoculars. They're about a mile away. There's five command tents side by side. I see officers running back and forth between them. There's troops and artillery batteries all along the front ridge of the mountain. And no one guarding them back. We'll have to go way around them, but we'll be clear. Now, you know our plans. We've been over them 1,000 times. Rona, Archer, you take the lead with me. We'll have to dump anyone we run across silently. That means non-exploding star knives and Archer's crossbow. Don't use the heavy stuff unless they actually start firing. Surprise is our only chance. Let's not make any mistakes. There's too much at stake. You got me?
I got it.
They began moving across the plateau in a half crouch, running from tree to tree, bush to bush. Nobody saw them. They had nearly 2 miles to go in their circuitous route around the backside of the mountain peak, but after climbing the damn thing, running on a flat surface felt almost effortless. At last, they swung all the way around the 3-mile-wide plateau and began moving slower as they came up on the rear of the German command center.
It's begun.
Brock? Brock, can you hear me? Damn it, it's not working.
Let's go. We've got to go full speed from now on. The start of the fighting will have distracted them. Don't stop, don't look back. If one of us gets hit, he gets left. This is bigger than any of us. Now go!
They shot forward from their hiding places behind a row of dark boulders at a full run. The tents loomed in the near distance, growing larger by the second as the echoes of the artillery of both sides shattered the calm of the valley. Their eyes and ears were super sensitive, their every perception in a state of heightened ability, as are all those who are about to kill or be killed.
Scheiße!
A guard post, 5 Germans. One of them had spotted the Americans. Everything seemed to move in slow motion. The 3 remaining guards reached for their weapons. Rona pulled out 2 star blades.
Archer!
Archer!
Good job, everybody. Now keep going.
They sped past the still quivering bodies, running up to a row of jeeps parked just behind the command tents.
Hold up here. We're going to go for the largest one, in the center. It has to be Von Reisling's headquarters. Satchels. Set timers for 10 seconds. Rona, you and I will hit the main tent. Archer and McCoughlin, you take the 2 on the right. Detroit, yours are the 2 on the left. Set the timers and then start heaving. Aim for the tops. There's no time for subtlety. The first few may be shielded by the canvas, but the rest should drop in and take care of business. Any questions? Archer, did you understand?
Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. Right.
Good. Ready? Now!
They soared end over end, steel timing devices reflecting the sun for a split second. Then they hit. Chen's first pack of plastique bounced off the flat, springy surface of the tent roof. It blasted a 10-foot-wide hole in the material, and the second pack dropped in. The free fighters continued tossing until they ran out. The tents shook and flamed inside, as if the very fires of hell had been unleashed on their occupants. Within seconds, all 5 tents were ablaze, sending up balls of smoke and fire. They stood there for a second, watching the tents burn wildly, flames shooting in every direction.
I'm not hearing any more screams. Let's go.
They tore back across the plateau, heading in the opposite direction of the way they had come up. The German forces would be scattered now. Their entire command was wiped out.
There's a chopper ahead. That's our right. Weapons at the ready.
But this time the Germans saw them coming.
Yeah, this is fun!
Yeah. It's all fun and...
McCoughlin!
I'm fine. Get the chopper!
While Detroit, Archer, and Chen advanced on the now terrified Germans, Rona reached the back of the chopper and rushed around to the pilot seat.
Die, bitch.
But Rona was ready for it. She whipped her head to the side as the bullet whizzed past her, taking a chunk of her hair with it. At the same time, she kicked up with her right leg.
Not today, asshole.
Rona jumped in and swung her rifle around into the passenger section. She rushed back to the cargo door.
Everybody inside! Now!
The Free Fighters tumbled in, McCoughlin bleeding badly from the thigh, Detroit holding his hand over one shoulder that leaked red down onto his khaki jacket. Shen was the last one in, making sure nobody was following.
Let's get the hell out of here! Rona, you know how to fly this thing?
No, not really.
I do. Just give me a second. Let's see this baby. And away we go.
He eased the stick forward, and the German helicopter, for use by Nazi officers only, charged toward the back of the mountain. Below and behind her, Rona could see the command tents burning like bonfires in the noonday sun.
Not bad for a morning's work.
Nope. Not bad at all.
Far below them, von Reisling stood alongside the burning tents as troops frantically tried to extinguish the flames. But he knew it was too late. There was nothing to save in there but charred bones. His body was coated with a thin sheen of his own blood. But he was alive. His radar-patched eye had seen the first of the satchels as it flew down onto the command tent roof. He knew there was no time to warn the others. Besides, he was what mattered. He had torn out of the back of the tent at a full run, knocking over officers as they stared after him with puzzled expressions. But they had found out, in a most hideous way, why their commander was fleeing, and by then, it was too late. Von Reisling looked up at the helicopter, quickly disappearing over the mountain edge with hate in his eyes. He had underestimated these free fighters. They were more than guerrillas. They were tacticians. Within his hate was twisted respect as well. They had struck quickly and forcefully, as the Führer himself had conducted his military campaigns, and they had dealt a powerful blow against his army. But he was alive, and that was all that mattered. They had won a battle, but the war, that was a different matter. He walked slowly and painfully over to the edge of the plateau, shaking off field doctors attempting to treat his wounds. The commander of all the German forces looked down on his panzer divisions as they spread out, boxing in the free fighters on the plains below, as he had commanded just minutes before. Soon they would all be cut off, and then they would die. From his perch on the northern peak, Roxen could see the free fighters fighting valiantly as hordes of the hybrid riding sappers continued to sweep in from all sides. They threw their explosive charges into the advancing German ranks and under the endless stream of panzer tanks. But bravery is an emotion, and overwhelming numbers of men and equipment, a reality. The free fighters had been preparing for this day, for an all-out battle with the enemy for years. But not yet. It was too soon. The Americans were not ready, and it would spell their doom. He looked through the field glasses with a sinking heart as he took in the full picture of the war. The tanks were forming a square around the valley floor, which would trap all the free fighters. The sappers were taking Nazis out by the dozen, but new ones kept streaming out from the center, taking the place of every death machine that was destroyed. He could see the ranks of Nazi troops goose-stepping forward, alongside the metal monsters firing from the waist. He could see his own brothers and sisters of freedom falling like flies everywhere, sacrificing their lives to take out as many as they could.
It's not enough.
No. We've taken out tens of thousands of their troops.
But there's just too many. I'm ordering the withdrawal. I just hope it's not too late.
I hope so too, Roxen.
Retreat. Retreat now. Further confrontation on the valley floor is useless. Head east. Rejoin free fighter forces at fallback position 2.
Roger. We'll try.
Order received.
Roxen, what happened?
I'm not sure, but I think I just felt a man die. Gunmen, give them covering fire and pass the word along. Hit those tanks coming to the left. That column of panzers.
The word was sent along the artillery line by flag. But there was more to worry about. The German advance ranks were reaching the bottom of the northern mountain and scaling it. Long lines of black-booted troops came charging up the slope. and behind them, the rock-climbing tanks, their huge steel legs whipping end over end, pulling them up over the big boulders that dotted the side of the mountain. Every man, woman, and teenager in their defensive position along the slope fired down with everything they had. Machine guns, mortars, liberators, 45s. But the Nazi charge was relentless.
Rock, there's nowhere really to go. The fallback positions will just slow them down. But even then, our forces will be scattered. Our only advantage left is height, and those climbing machines are gonna take care of that.
Roxon! We're being overrun! There's nowhere!
What do we do? My troops are panicking! There's just so many!
Stop it! Jesus!
The Doomsday Warrior looked out at the battlefield as it turned to a charnel ground. For a moment, he wished he was dead. It would be better than seeing the slaughter of his people. Perhaps a stray bullet would rip into him. A mortar shell would come too close.
What? What the? Schecter, give me back the binoculars.
What? Certainly, Roxon.
Is that? Yes. Off in the distance. The glowers.
Three huge glowing shapes appeared at the far end of the valley. Strange floating craft burning with a blinding blue electricity. The glowers were riding into the back ranks of the Nazis on their immense sand ships. The plains below were filled end to end with German troops, and the ships themselves were tearing them apart. Sped through the ranks, sending men flying in all directions. The electric force that surrounded each of them individually had been extended through mental power to protect the ships themselves, each with a ball of blue lightning twisting around it like the Aurora Borealis. The glowers stood on the bows, their hands just inches apart, like stars in full nova, sending their bursts of death into the universe.
We have come as promised. Only those with evil in their hearts need fear us. The pure shall not be harmed.
The glowing craft sailed back and forth on the valley floor, their energy sails billowing out high above them, collecting energy from the sun and the stars. Oblivious to the intensity of the firepower being leveled on them, the glowers on board the craft began sending out their mental waves. They joined their thoughts together and created illusion. The waves of illusion flowed into the brains of the Nazis, who fought like tigers all around them. The telepathic commands reached deep into the subconscious of the soldiers, bringing up their deepest fears, their dark personal hells, the nightmares that they had pushed down into the sewers of their unconscious. Whatever they feared most, they suddenly saw before them. Rats, rabid dogs, bottomless pits that plummeted endlessly down, mutated horned demons chewing their flesh into bloody pieces. Every Nazi soldier in the valley entered a living hell. Corporal Wolfgang Schmidt was just at the bottom of the Rebels' mountain when he felt something strange. His body quivered with chills as he heard a sound. He was 6 years old. He was in the German Alpines near Dusseldorf. It was that woods wolf, with its foot-long fangs bared, coming at him with eyes like burning embers. He fired at the thing again and again, too terrified to wonder how such a thing could be on this field of battle. He clicked his Turgenev sub on full auto and swung it around him. He mowed down nearly a dozen of his own troops before another tortured soul's nightmare lashed back at him. Lieutenant von Dressler was just at the peak of the mountain commanding one of the rock-climbing tanks. He sighted up a group of Free Fighters firing at his death machine without effect. He went to push the button that would fire the big 122mm cannon of his vehicle. Suddenly, he couldn't believe his eyes. The snake lunged, wrapping itself around his throat. The mountain-climbing tank, having lost its driver, walked right over an embankment. Everywhere around the battlefield, each Nazi found his own doom, his own monster. Demons created by the mind and amplified by the glower's telepathic commands. They saw what they thought were their enemies and fought back desperately to destroy them, shooting, knifing, strangling one another in total and complete madness. The tide of war was changing. The free fighters on the valley floor dove for cover, letting the enemy destroy itself. Their minds were not affected by the glower's nightmarish waves. Those who fought for freedom were spared. Those who fought for evil were consumed.
My God, what is happening?
Those strange craft must be doing this. Munition 7, concentrate fire upon the three craft!
Von Riesling could see, even from here, the arc of electricity that shot out to ignite the shell as it fired. The arc continued, held for a moment, and struck out at the nearby artillery.
They're going to destroy my whole army. Years of toil and billions of rubles. This cannot happen. Withdraw! Withdraw! Everybody set up covering fire, but withdraw now!
Roxen stared down, his grim expression changing to one of exultation as he saw the massacre on the floor below. The power of the glowers was beyond belief. He wasn't sure what the hell they were doing, but obviously some sort of mental signal was being sent out across the battlefield. Something that he couldn't receive, something he was glad he couldn't. The Nazi ranks pulled back, slowly at first, and then on the run, leaving tons of equipment behind them as they hightailed it back to the southern slopes at the other end of Forrester Valley.
Keep firing! Send down everything we've got! Every Nazi we take out now, we won't have to fight later.
The mood on the peak of the free fighting forces was joyful. They threw their arms around one another, tears of thanks running down their dirty, scratched faces. Whoever these creatures were, wreaking havoc on the plains below, they were clearly friends of free men everywhere. Century City was saved.
What was... Dr. Schechter, your stomach.
Right behind us.
Oh. Aha! Got one! Attention, freedom fighter! This is the leader of the 201st Wood Pack! Surrender! Or die!
Shit! It's okay, Shepard. I got you. Shit! Sorry about that, Schechter. You're safe behind this boulder. I'll hold him off.
He poked his head up over the boulder that shielded them. 25 Germans were coming full speed right toward them.
Five down, 20 to go.
You men, take left, while you take right. You will soon die, free fighter! Come out now and your death will be easy!
There's been enough death today. Your forces have been beaten. There's nobody left to report to. Surrender now and we'll let you live. As commander of the free forces, I promise you that.
It was crazy. The Nazis were beaten, but these fools didn't even know it. The glower's mental signals must have a limit to their reach. That's why they sailed around the valley, so they could hit all the troops. Rock knew his shot pistol, as deadly as it wasn't going to stop this bunch. He turned around to see if he could get any help. The artillery unit closest to him, some 50 feet away, were lying draped over the bottom of their cannon. The advancing Nazis must have caught them with their first barrage.
Stay here, Schechter.
But the scientist was already unconscious. Just as well. Rock shot straight up. Four more down. The cannon wasn't far, but with Nazis firing with everything they had, it seemed like a million miles off.
Get him! Here's Anita! Kill him, and you will be this forever!
Made it.
The Doomsday Warrior hoisted himself up into the firing seat. The damn thing was loaded. Great. He pulled a lever, and the immense cannon began turning slowly around from its previous target on the valley floor. As it swiveled, Rock cranked a hand-pushed wheel that lowered the muzzle of the stolen SS-120 cannon until it was aiming almost straight down, directly at the wolf pack.
Get him! Get that damn mutant bastard!
Not today.
When the dust cleared seconds later, Rock saw instantly that there was nothing left. Not a man. Not even a piece of a man. They had chosen, and they had died. The great sand ships of the Glowers at last came to a rest in the center of the valley. The three bows of the 200-foot-long crafts pointed at one another, creating, to those who looked down from above, the appearance of a three-pointed star. They stood on the bows and surveyed the damage they had wrought. They had felt the pain of every one of the men slaughtered by their own projected nightmares. But they felt no guilt for what had to be done. They took in the magnitude of death and devastation around them. Even they had never seen the full extent of what their powers could do, and they, in their own way, were awed. The Glowers hoisted the great sails up to their full capacity and turned the ships around, heading back toward the valley entrance. They mentally charted their course back home and vanished like a ship full of shooting stars into the slowly darkening sun. Ten miles to the east of Forrester Valley, Keeloff looked through binoculars out at the battlefield that had turned into a bloody massacre.
They managed to defeat the Nazis. Incredible. But perhaps the Free Fighters' victory is to my advantage. Yes, Premier Vasily has suffered yet another terrible blow with the destruction of his precious German force. The Kremlin power makers will wonder. Wilder now, if he is weakening. They will begin casting their eyes elsewhere for a new leader. A stronger leader. A man like myself. And the perfect time to show my power is now. Right at the instant of apparent defeat. Their forces are spread out over a 20-mile range. Century City must be within that area. I am sure of it.
Yes, Colonel Keeloff.
I am enacting Code 17. I want 6 bombers over Forrester Valley, each armed with a neutron bomb. I want a mode red strike to be enacted immediately.
Received and carried out.
All these years, and now I can destroy both my hated enemy and cement my chances for becoming the next premier. Goodbye, Ted Roxon. Goodbye, Century City.
The fleet of 6 Ilyushin 7 jet bombers streaked out of their landing field some 30 miles away. Swept back wings, noses arched forward like a hawk's beak, they were fearsome weapons indeed, capable of reaching Mach 4 if necessary. Although on this trip, there would be nothing to stop them. Major Velyensky piloted the lead jet, the other 5 forming a V formation behind him. They were but 3 minutes to the target zone. The technicians with Lang leading up the twisting trails behind Ice Mountain had traveled for days. Everything had gone wrong. From blinding sandstorms to half the bridge dying from lack of water. But they were here, and that was what mattered.
These slopes have a ratio of incline to hybrid stability that is quite alarming.
Yeah, but we made it to the top.
The peak they were on looked down on Century City, some 2 miles off.
Sorry about that. I'll speak to the construction teams as soon as we're home about building some superhighways up here.
I sense an equation of jocularity.
Halt! Who goes there?
Coleman, no! It's okay. It's one of the good guys. Shannon! It's Lang! Remember me, Lang? I'm back with the expeditionary force sent to bring back the technicians. Well, here we are. I must say I was expecting a more fitting welcome.
Jesus! Lang! Where the hell have you been? Don't you know we got a goddamn war going on around here?
A war? What happened?
We don't know for sure yet. There's wounded already coming back from Forrester Valley, and they said it wasn't going too good at all. Could have used your friends here, though, I'll tell you that. Too bad you're so damned late.
Fuck off, Shannon. We did every damn thing we could. Those jets are flying in a circle.
As if to strike.
Holy shit. Maybe we're not too late after all. Ullman, deploy your men. There's no time for setting up tripods or any of that shit. Just tell them to pull them out and start firing. Those are red bombers. And I think I know what kind of cargo they're carrying.
There is a sudden necessitation of destructive energy. Without proper mathematical coordinates, we are requested to equate particle beam energies necessary to terminate approaching air vehicles.
At once, the remaining technicians drew their pistols and unslung their black beam rifles, lying down on the rocky trail as Shannon looked on in amazement. They sighted up the six jets using the three triangular sights that stood on top of the smooth black barrels. One after another of the small race of super geniuses pulled the triggers on their deadly weapons. The black beams, as dark as the darkest dream, shot out of the narrow muzzles and in a millionth of a second slammed into the bombers, themselves moving at nearly 2,500 miles per hour.
Two down!
The black beams tore out of nearly 35 smooth plastic alloy barrels. They didn't seem to fire so much as just suddenly be there, hanging in the air for miles.
Another one down!
Three subtracted, three positive.
The three jets suddenly broke formation completely, two of them moving to the right and left in sharp dives, their wings tilted at 90-degree angles. The third continued straight ahead, coming in toward the technicians and Ice Mountain.
Don't let him get away! If any of them drops its load, it could mean the death of thousands of free fighters!
The technicians didn't even take their fingers off the small triggers of their weapons. They just let the black beams search across the sky, desperately trying to make contact. Three beams reached one jet almost at the same instant. There was nothing left of it.
Inertia demands trajectory now!
One left!
But Major Valiansky was piloting the final jet, and he had seen his share of firefights, though none quite like this. He knew that only every bit of his experience and cunning would get him through. He also knew that if he came back in defeat, the Colonel would see that he died a horrible death. He dropped the Aleutian down to tree level in a screaming dive and straightened out, heading toward the source of the black beams and, he assumed, Century City, at nearly 3,000 miles per hour. The tips of the wings glowed white hot as he approached the limits of its structural endurance. He shot forward like a meteor, the afterburner charring the tops of firs and pines in a trail of black. Soon, soon.
Where the hell is he?
What goes down must come up.
The technician's fingers were ready on the triggers for the sight of the supersonic jet.
There it is! Eliminate! Eliminate!
The jet's bomb bay doors opened, and a glinting globe of steel dropped out from the vertically climbing Aleutian, plummeting to the earth. But the jet had to slow slightly in its climb straight up to the heavens. Several beams touched the 50-foot jet at the same instant. For a split second, all the steel, the fiberglass, the teeth and flesh of Major Valiansky fused before the molecular bonds broke down.
Six minus six equals zero!
Down! Down! All of you!
He grabbed Ullman under one arm and carried the technician leader 20 feet where he dove behind a solid rock peak. Some of the technicians, realizing something was wrong, followed suit. Many didn't. The the air over Ice Mountain, some 2 miles off, was suddenly lit with the retina-burning, writhing hell of an atomic blast. Gamma rays, alpha, and beta rays shot out in every direction, burning every living thing they came in contact with to a black porridge. The very cell of the trees, animals, and humans that the deadly radiation touched were fried to a watery ooze in the space of a millionth of a second. The technicians who had made it to the rock covering were safe. Their brothers out in the open lay curled up, little fetal balls of black sculpture. Around the mountain rise, the technicians' black beam weapons lay melted, shriveled up in twisted shapes, nothing but dripping plastic. The neutron bomb went off just a mile and a half from Century City. 1 minute the people inside were going about their business, treating the first of the wounded coming back from the Battle of Forrester Valley, sending out more ammunition by hybrid team. The next, they were lying on the concrete floors of the subterranean world as the walls, the very mountain above the city, shook and trembled as if in the hands of a giant. Machinery and equipment fell over, crashing into useless pieces. Computers ignited from the electric pulses of the blast, flames shooting out of their screens. Throughout the city, the lights flickered for long seconds before the emergency system cut on. Shells in the Liberator factory ignited from the heat streaming right through the mountain's 200 feet of rock and set off an explosion that cracked half the walls of the city, setting numerous small fires. Throughout the multiple levels of Century City, horror stories unfolded. Men crushed by falling equipment, trapped in rooms suddenly blazing with flames. The hydroponics tanks shattered from the initial blast of the bomb, their 10,000 nutrient-grown vegetables and fruits spewing out onto the floors, followed by a cascade of water, which shot down the lower hulls. By dawn's early light, the first of the returning victorious forces came to the northern entrance to the city and stared in horror. The wide cave entrance was no more. The soil was black, hard on the surface. Whatever went off had sent an avalanche of rock and dust covering the entire base of a mountain beneath which Century City was built. The American troops went from hidden entrance to hidden entrance, finding each one covered with tons of debris. They felt a ghastly feeling in the pits of their stomachs. They could survive even the heavy losses of the battle back there in the valley. But if Century City was gone, at last, somebody found a small entrance, hardly large enough for a man to fit through. The free fighters frantically clawed away at the rubble in front of the narrow cavern until they had made an opening. They slid through one by one and ran down the corridor as it opened inside, dreading what they would find at the other end. They emerged into the main debriefing chamber and found more devastation. The walls and ceilings had nearly collapsed. Bodies lay strewn around the rock floor, decapitated, ripped open by the falling structure. Dust and blankets of plastic coating that had covered the high cavern walls were everywhere. But the city still stood. Wounded, badly damaged, it was still there. The thick rock walls of the mountain above had saved it. The free fighters made their way from level to level, helping the wounded, assessing damage. The top brass from civilian and military sectors of the city's inhabitants held an emergency meeting as each detailed just what damage had been done in their portions of Century City. It was bad, but it could have been a lot worse. All the main power and life support systems, including air filtration, were either undamaged or had already been repaired. Hydroponics was totaled, but basic nutrient stock and stockpiling of unassembled tanks were still functional. Schechter's science labs were coated with at least 2 inches of dust and rock and filled with overturned lab tables, but most of its equipment was still functioning. The gymnasium, the communal dining area and kitchens, and the library and video rooms were in shambles. In all, nearly a third of the city had been destroyed. A third suffered slight to moderate damage, and a third was unaffected. As the casualty figures poured in from messengers at the makeshift hospitals, it became clear that they hadn't suffered losses as bad as it had first appeared. About 600 were dead, another 1,000 wounded, but most expected to live. It could have been worse. A lot worse. Roxen waited on the northern peak until every last Nazi had exited Forrester Valley, and until Dr. Schechter had been carted off to Century City. He was elated. The battle had gone well, miraculously so. The Glowers had kept the promise they had made to him when he had been in their camp months before.
Thank you, friends. You've saved us all.
He stared out over the valley, filled with smoking ruins, tanks lying on their backs like bloated turtles, flames pouring from their cannons, the bodies of the countless dead. The Nazi artillery units continued to send out random volleys of shells from far across the valley, covering their withdrawal and hoping to take a few more free fighter souls with them on this day of death for Germany.
Who's there?
Rock! Oh, you're alive! Oh, thank God!
Rona! Where the hell did you come
from? We got the command center, Rock. Then stole a chopper. Detroit took the team back to CC. I got out to look for you. I had to, Rock. I couldn't contact you, and I had the most horrible feeling.
Well, I'm alive. And we won.
He put his strong arms around her and pressed her tightly against him.
I know. The Glowers. I saw them when I was tamping through these damned woods looking for you. We had a few problems on the way.
She let go of him and walked over to the edge of the peak where Rock had commanded the battle and stared down hard. Flocks of buzzards and vultures flew from the surrounding towering rises, their immense dark wings filling the sky. They soared down in ever tighter circles amid the many fires below and fell onto the dead with a ravenous hunger, tearing at the once-in-a-lifetime feast.
Oh, so many dead.
I know, but they can't...
Look out!
An arm-sized shell dug into the granite just feet below Rona. She was tossed into the air like a rag doll, landing hard just inches from the edge, and a 100-foot drop.
Rona!
He carried her a few yards to a patch of soft moss and laid her carefully down. Her face was deeply gashed along the temple as blood seeped through her white ski suit from numerous small wounds.
Rona! Rona!
Her eyelids fluttered slightly. He lifted her head onto his lap and kissed her pale lips. She was alive, but her wounds were bad.
Rock!
Shh! Don't talk.
Why not? Might as well tell you, Rock. You are my love.
Rona,
Tell me that you love me once more.
I love you. I do love you, Rona.
You're a good liar.
He held her tightly in his arms, not daring to let go. As if he clutched her tightly enough, somehow death would not be able to take her into the dark beyond.
No.
Roxen was lifted bodily from the force of the blast, his arms releasing Rona as he was knocked momentarily unconscious by the force of the blast. He lay motionless, just yards away from her. Slowly, he came to, the world spinning around him like a top out of control. He tried to rise but found it difficult to move, his muscles like rubber. Then he turned and saw her, so pale, like a dream, like a princess in a dream. Her eyes opened and she looked at him from a few yards away.
Rock, are you...
Just stunned. I'll be all right in a minute. Just have to catch my breath.
He turned his face so she couldn't see the deep gash on the right side of his head.
Rock, I'm afraid. Not of dying, but of being without you.
No one's dying.
He mind-linked with her, sending out his strength in telepathic streams, shoring her up with the will of his own soul as she struggled above the waiting waves of death that slapped around her living flesh.
I won't let you die, Rona.
Roxen would not let the Grim Reaper claim this woman. Death would have to fight them both.
Let it come. I won't let you go.
He felt a black energy soar in toward her, reaching, straining to pull her into its world. And Ted Roczen, using every bit of strength that was in him, struck out at the life-taking claws of the Dark Destroyer. Doomsday Warrior, America's Last Declaration. Adapted and directed by Dan Smith. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Aaron Miller. Narrated by James Konacek. With performances by David Coyne, Terrence Azelford, Karen Carbone, Tim Carlin, Michael Glenn, Christopher Grayville, Ken Jackson, Sonny Lasky, James Lewis, Dylan Lynch, Richard Rowan, Nanette Savard, Mort Shelby, and M.B. Van Dorn. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Featuring music by Johann Detweiler, Aaron Miller, and Nathaniel Perry. Doomsday Warrior is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1985, Ryder Stacey. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Doomsday Warrior, be sure to look for Don Pendleton's Stony Man and James Axler's Deathlands. Available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll also find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free screensavers, desktops, ringtones, and games.
Creators that brought you the critically acclaimed Eagles series comes a whole new kind of Western. Far from the civilized lands of the East lies a harsh and brutal territory, surrounded by towering mountains and battered by howling winds. There is no law. There are no rules. The land is governed by the way of the gun. Blood is the only currency, and all debts are paid in full. In this land, there is a legend.
Some people say he's always been here. They say he's as old as the mountains. They say he's a ghost.
Running from a past he can't escape, killing in order to live, his legend grows. No one knows his face. They all know his name.
Who are you?
They call me Preacher.
The High Lonesome is his land. He rides alone, fighting for the innocent. The wicked be damned. He is the ghost of the wilds. He is the first mountain man. He is Preacher.
What are you gonna do now?
I'm gonna find him, and I'm gonna kill every damn one of them.
Your regularly scheduled programming to bring you the President of the United States of America.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. If you are now hearing this message, it is because something of vital concern to the American people has just taken place. It would appear now that the possibility exists of Soviet military action to some degree or another against the United States. If you are now hearing this message, it simply means that we
Hello?
Have...
Hello?
Sarah, it's me.
Oh, God, Tom. I'm so scared. Where are you? Are you watching the TV?
I know, Sarah. It's okay.
John, what's going to happen? What should I do?
Sarah, hold on. I'll be home soon.
Promise me, John. Promise me you'll make it home.
Nothing on earth can stop me. I love you, Sarah. I'll be home soon, I promise you.
The promise was made.
Ladies and gentlemen, approximately 15 minutes ago, satellites indicated a massive Soviet intercontinental ballistic missile launch against the U.S. mainland.
The end game was played.
God, it's gone. It's all gone.
Now, the promise must be kept. Hell has swept across America. Anarchy and chaos reign. But somewhere in the blackness of this labyrinthian abyss, his family waits for him.
John, where the hell are you going?
My family needs me. I'm gonna find them.
The Reds have death squads everywhere. And even if you manage to escape them, you can't survive the desert. It's too big, man. You have to accept that your family... Well, there's no way they could have survived.
My family is alive. They need me. And I will find them.
Alone, John Thomas Worth will set out across the endless wasteland. All his CIA covert operative training will be put to the test. Driven by love and fueled by hate, he will fight. He will kill. He will survive.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.